Gig Gab, the show for working musicians, episode 425 for Monday, April 15th, World Art Day 2024. Greetings and welcome to Gig Gab, everybody. We are the show by, for, and about working musicians here in Durham, New Hampshire. As usual, I'm Dave Hamilton, and on the guitar playing along with the theme song is my guest co-host for today, Adam Moskowitz from Van Band, or as another listener referred to you after we had you on last time, Adam Moskowizard. Thanks for coming back on the show, Adam.
Yes, the invisible conductor has returned from Boca Raton, South Florida. Happy to be here, Dave. Thanks again for bringing me back.
Yeah, absolutely. So, right, you were back, or you were on the show back, in the fall, and mm-hmm. we did. We called you the invisible conductor, episode 397.
Yeah, back in the Paul Kent days.
In the Paul Kent, right, that's right.
It was all three of us.
Yeah. I was actually texting with Paul the other day, so yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. No, he's doing good, and he's got a hefty gig schedule coming up. We'll have him back on, too. So,
Very cool.
Of course. Yeah. So, you just to give people the quick rundown of what you do or what we learned about you last time, you have built this modular cover band that is capable of taking the stage without rehearsing with any number of different members. You have you're like five or six deep at each position, and you just pull on the people that are available for the gig, and you've got tracks and clicks and guides and video screens for the performers with lyrics, and you just make it all happen. And that's still what you're doing, right?
Yeah, you nailed it. That's those are the magic, parts of the configuration that allow all this to happen.
Yeah.
And I actually love, rehearsing with musicians. I love that. And I'm actually will be doing a few gigs on bass coming up where I'll be rehearsing with another band.
Yep.
And that should be a lot of fun. I've been prepping and learning all the songs on bass. And I've been gigging on guitar with the Van Band, those are my two instruments where I can play at a professional level.
Sure.
And since I started Van Band, I sort of transitioned to guitar and put a lot of focus on my guitar playing. And I've been looking over at my bass in the corner of my man cave here, and I've just been looking at it, and it's been looking at me, and it's been asking me to play it. And so I've done a few things in the last couple of months just to put myself out there as a bass player again.
Oh.
And I had another band hire me for a few gigs, and I've actually hired myself in Van Band to play bass, and I hired a guitar player to take my normal role. So that's all coming up, and I'm very excited about it.
Wow. Okay. All right. So that's fascinating. I knew you were in an original ska or reggae band or something prior to Van Band, right? I mean,
Yeah, not so much ska, but I would say funky reggae was our style.
Okay.
And I played bass in that band for about a decade.
Got it.
I played bass my entire music career. That's how I got started into playing instruments. So
yep.
I have a immense love for the low end. And when I hire bassists for Van Band, I'm listening with a very discerning ear, and I know I'm hiring people that are better than me at bass. That's
yep.
basically my goal.
Yeah, right. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, of course.
But I know I can do the job. My strength is not in slapping, and I hire some guys that really is their strength, and they can go crazy with that kind of style.
That's great.
And when I make the set list for myself on bass, I'm making it with that in mind. You know, I have that advantage as band leader.
Right. Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thing. The band leader advantage, right? And I've thought about this a lot. There's a few bands where I have been in more of a leadership role than others, where I'm sideman. Certainly some bands I'm in, I'm truly a sideman, but others I'm a band fully fledged band member, but not the one leading the band, not the one doing the bookings, not the one building the set lists. It's, I use the term Dave Bang Drum. It's not rarely am I ever somewhere where truly that's all I do, right? Like I'm usually involved in other parts of it, the sound or whatever, but not involved in the booking of the gigs and or the like the set list creation. And there is that band leader advantage because the band leader is doing the extra work. Don't get me wrong. Like there is a cost to buying this advantage, right? It's usually time.
Very much. Yep.
Right. But you wind up getting the opportunity to say, okay, well, you know, I kind of sort of have a thing on this particular Friday night. If somebody were to call me with a gig, I would do the gig. But as the band leader, I get to sort of pick and choose and I'll move the gig to that Saturday. You know, if I'm on the phone with the client or whatever, I'll just move the gig to that Saturday night and give myself the opportunity to have that Friday free. Like those kinds of things happen. The set list kinds of things happen. And it's an interesting thing being in that position some of the time and not being in that position the rest of the time, right?
Yes.
You know, not having that band leader advantage. It again, it comes with a cost, and I like just being called and be like, hey, you want to play? Yep. All right, good to go. You know, and I don't have to do the work. But you do get a benefit. You get some flexibility.
Most definitely, you know, being in charge of the schedule, I'm booking around my life and my availability. You know, I have a shared calendar with my wife, so we always can stay coordinated in that way. And I have a shared calendar with the band.
Right.
And some of the other services I supply outside of Van Band. I also am a sound engineer, and I've been doing a lot of gigs with other bands recently. I also do videography. So all of those things get dumped into another calendar. I'm calling that brand Vam Jam.
Okay.
So I have Van Band and I have Vam Jam, where I'm doing all these other music and creative related jobs. But it is separate from the band. And, you know, I do all the video for my own band, but I've been having a lot of fun helping out other local bands and helping create promo videos for them because I have this skill. You know, not all musicians are video editors and creators. And many videographers, they edit, but they're not musicians, so they don't quite know how to craft with the musical mind. They don't.
Sure.
They don't edit. You know, they'll be showing the lead singer when it's a drum solo, just as an example.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And I am a musician, so I know who to show in what moment. I know what musicians are looking for as far as, you know, a final result for that will help their band get more gigs. Because making videos for my own band, I think, has been a little bit of a superpower for Van Band to build a reputation and let people know we're working.
Yeah.
You have to show people that you're working at a high level or else how will they know? Not everybody can make it to one show or every show. And for me, exemplifying that with videos online, it's been huge for the growth of my band.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah, and you're right. If you're doing video for your band, either having your videographer or video producer be a musician themselves or work very, very, very closely with the band on crafting the shots. I remember I saw, this was years ago at South by Southwest, I somehow weaseled my way into the premiere at an IMAX theater of the Rolling Stones Shine a Light film, which was, this was in 2008. Martin Scorsese directed it. Right. Like, and it was shot, I think, over the course of three nights at the Beacon Theater, the Stones played, which is, would have been a great venue to see the Stones, you know, about 5,000 seats or something. Right. You know,
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. But as part of the movie, they talked about the process of it. And Scorsese's like, look, I'm not a musician, so I need you to tell me what's going on. And it was interesting seeing how that negotiation happened between the band and Scorsese, because they were like, well, you know, we got to be able to do what we want to do. If we spend a week with you beforehand, we're putting together a scripted show now that's not, you know, just a band playing on stage. They're like, you're not going to get the set list until we walk on stage, man. Like, we change this and we need this to be you filming us, not us collaborating on what the show's going to be. You know, we can collaborate on how to film. But they talk to him about like the flow of songs and think about this, and there's going to be a guitar solo here and this, that, and the other. And they actually had somebody with Scorsese, you know, kind of calling shots during the film, whispering in his ear to, you know, like, hey, go cut to Keith here, cut to the, you know, do this, do that. And yeah, so yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
Right. I think the best is always to go in with the game plan, but always go with the flow. Always.
Yes.
Because the moment will take you in other directions that you could never perceive while you were planning. So I find, you know, I'm a huge planner. You could tell from how I run the band and, you know, how I activate all of these different elements that there has to be a lot of planning and forethought that goes into it. But when we get to the show and we're on stage, my whole system is very flexible. I can, you know, switch songs at any moment. And I often do because I'm sensing something from the crowd.
Yeah.
Or more recently, we started using this request app called My Set, MySET.
Yeah.
And what you're able to do is put QR codes out. And I'm actually getting a banner created that'll just go by the front of the stage, like a foot and a half tall.
Sure.
But what I've done is what you do is you load your song list, your specific band song list
into
this app. Yeah. And any fan can scan the QR code and they pop up to your band's page. It also does have your social media and other things, but you can set a minimum tip threshold. So I typically just do $5. And,
yep.
and it assigns that to every song, or you can go into individual songs like Freebird and put $1,000.
Sure, yeah. Like,
and if we're never going to play it, but if somebody's going to throw us $1,000, I will start that chord progression right now.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So, but yeah, this yeah. app, we've just started dabbling with it. We've used it 3 times so far, and it's been very, very cool. I learned about it from Steve Witchell over at Cover Band Central.
Yeah.
And I've been advocating it to all the local bands I know. I'm like, you guys, you should try this. It's very easy to set up. And we played a venue where it's impossible to get tips because there's like a physical bar between the stage and the audience.
Oh, right.
So therefore, nobody's ever going to be like, hey, can you pass the band to $20? Like, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But we put this QR code out on all the tables and we ended up making over $100 because, and it fosters this very cool interaction.
I was just going to say, there's the interactivity of it. Yeah.
But more so, I'm an introverted guy beyond what you may see in my band's videos. You know, when I get a guitar on and I'm running around on stage, that's one version. That's stage Adam.
Yep.
But regular Adam, pretty shy guy. And what I would rarely go up to a band and say, hey, here's a 20. Can you play my favorite song? But what this allows is like the introverts in your audience to sit at their table, scan the code. They can put a message with their song request too. They can say, hey, it's my girlfriend's birthday. Can you give her a shout out?
Yeah.
So there's this interactive element, and it's people that are maybe too shy to come up and put a tip right. And, you know, they have to come on stage, kind of be part of the limelight to do an old school.
Yes. You're part of the show when you're going up to the stage, like whether you like
right.
it or not. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I know in my own personal life, I've wanted to tip people and I've avoided it because I'm like, oh, I don't want to get up there and
yeah.
you know, make a big deal. So this allows just anybody, shy people, whatever, to just be part of the show and you can give them a shout out on the microphone. It, you know,
if they want, yeah,
they put
right.
a request. And they can do the minimum tip or they can go above that. And many people go above that $5. They, you know,
sure,
people
give
15, $20 and it's like, hey, this is awesome. And I highly recommend people check out that app and experiment. If your band is a band that has a decent repertoire and can play requests, you can add your songs that you're willing to play and they can still request anything random. You know, there's still a manual type in.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's been really fun. And I'm really digging into that lately and enjoying that.
Wow, this is great. So just to, as I'm looking at it here, so everybody knows, they charge $1.50 a transaction. By default, that's actually charged to your fans. So you're getting 100% of everything that comes in through this. But you
yes.
can tweak it so that you pay the fees and your fans are just paying this, you know, flat amount or whatever. That's really cool. And where does the money come from? Like, is it using Venmo or PayPal, or is it charging their credit card? Like, what's the...
Yeah, so the really cool thing about it is that it allows Apple Pay, and I believe that's via Square. The support.
Great.
So yeah, okay. I think the other option is people could use credit cards, and yeah. I've actually been in touch with the designer of this app to say, hey, can you integrate like Venmo or something like that? That would be cool. And he said Square is not currently set up for that.
No.
But it's and you know, we've tried Venmo in the past, like we've just put out our Venmo handle, and yeah. honestly, very little uptake. You know, here and there we would get one, but with this app, we've gotten more more takers than any other thing we've tried.
Well, because it makes it interactive in a bespoke way. Certainly, people can. Mm-hmm. I've seen bands, and I think we've done it too with Monkey Fist, where we say, "Look, you know, we put out the QR code for our Venmo or whatever, you know, our Venmo handle on like you're talking about, like little mm-hmm. you know table inserts or something, right. so that everybody's got easy access to it." But and they can send a note with it, which could include a request. Of course, they could say anything mm-hmm. they want. They could say, you guys suck, you know, but play this song and I'll like you anyway. but it's not this workflow that is completely built for, you know, stepping people through type mm-hmm. here, pay here, go, you know, like so. Yeah, I can see why this lowers the friction. It makes it simpler.
Yeah, it's the best I've experienced, and wow. they pay you out within 2 days. It goes right to your bank account if you set it up that way,
yep.
direct deposit. So I'm loving it. I'm really excited to continue wow. using this. I wish I had started years ago, but, you know, now is the best time.
Today is the second best day. It always right. is. Yep, if yesterday was the best day, then today's the second best. That's right. Wow. All right, we'll put a link mm-hmm. to that in the show notes at giggabpodcast.com. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah,
that's great.
But all that back to say that, you know, the going with the flow of the moment, you know, the specific collection of people in that evening's crowd is going to provide an energetic frequency with and for the band. And I find that it's always best to ride whatever that specific wave is instead of something that I, you know, perceived a week or two ago when I was imagining what the show might be. You know, I try to do my best to design a great set list always, and we play every show with a unique set list and often a unique lineup. And what that allows is just like fresh energy at every single show. And that's always really fun for me. I do this for joy. I do this to bring joy to both myself and our crowd. So it's like, that's one way of injecting just a unique flavor to every single time we play. And that's something, you know, I picked up from my, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I want to let you finish that thought, 'cause I think I know where you were going with it.
Yeah. You know, there's some things that I learned from my favorite bands. And, one of those things, you know, one of my favorite bands to see live is the band Fish, and part of what they do. And I'll preface it this way. Take their music out of the equation. I'm just talking about the experience of going to see that band live. And if you haven't seen them live, I get it. You know, I was on the other side of this for a while, where I didn't quite understand the band. And once I experienced them live for the first time was actually in Miami for New Year's Eve in 2009, I believe it was.
I was at that show.
You're at that show, man. We probably crossed paths and we had no idea. You know what I mean? So you were there when they shot the drummer, John Fishman, out of the cannon.
That's correct.
Okay.
Through the roof, so to speak. Yep.
Yeah. So to explain to everybody that has no idea what we're talking about, Fish does special things at their shows. And one of those things is on New Year's, they do what they call a New Year's gag. And they do three sets on a New Year's show, and typically in the second set, they'll do some sort of special theatrical type of thing. And this was my first show seeing this band, and they did a prank where they pretended to lose their drummer. I forget the exact details of why he disappeared, but...
Yeah, they accidentally, like the cannon, quote-unquote, malfunctioned, and shot him out of the arena. Yeah. And there was some random woman from the crowd that said, I can play the drums, and came up and played. And it was actually him, you know, in costume or whatever.
It was actually the drummer in a wig that was
in a wig
secretly ran out to pretend to be in the crowd.
Yeah.
So, my mind was blown, because I was in the when you're in the 400 sections at a show like this, you can't really see the details.
No, we were also in the 400 sections.
we're sitting next to each other.
I have no doubt we were right next to each other. up on the side behind the drummer. So that's where we were that night. So yeah.
But all that to say, I love Phish's music. I love what they bring to the stage. But I'm just talking about the theatrical and the unique element that they bring to every show.
Yes.
They never play the same set list twice. When they're in the same city doing, you know, three or four nights in a row, they will never repeat a song. They will, you know, make sure that they spread out, you know, their quote-unquote hits throughout a run. And they even did this thing called the Baker's Dozen at Madison Square Garden. I forget exactly what year this was, but it's been a few years ago.
I believe it was 2017.
There you go. And what they did, they called it a Baker's Dozen because they did 13 shows, not entirely consecutively. They had a couple, you know, breaks in there for people to, you know, be human. But they did 13 shows in a row, and each show had a theme based on a donut flavor. So, you know, the example that sticks out to me is they did one flavor, Boston Cream. And then that night they did songs by the band Boston, you know, More Than a Feeling. And then they did the song by the band Cream, you know. So those are the kind of things I'm talking about, where they make it that more than just about playing 20 whatever songs in a night. They make it special. They make it so that fans that come see them multiple times get a really fun, unique experience at every single time they come to see them. And in the capacity of Van Band, of my project, you know, we're not doing completely improvised shows. We're not, you know, we do some jamming, some improvising within the song structures, but where I try to bring that unique flavor is in the song selection and in the lineup selection. And that allows it that people that come see us in South Florida here, they get a lot of great feedback because they're like, they have so much fun when they see the band, and then they come to see the band again and they're like, wait, what am I looking at? You know, they're confused at first, but then they have a wonderful night dancing. And then at the end of the show, they're coming up to me and saying, I don't know how you do this. I don't know how you pull it off, but it was freaking amazing. And you know, that brings me a lot of joy. I do this for fun, and I do this because music has this, you know, magical capacity. And I've experienced that when I go to see my favorite bands. I'm just naming Phish as one of them because
sure.
To me, that's, you know, one of the pinnacles of what I consider a live rock show to be. And, you know, don't judge me out there if you're a Phish hater. It's all good. I love you too. It's like, whatever your favorite band is, plug them into what I'm talking about.
Learn from this. I knew this is why I wanted to let you roll a little bit, because I was going to basically say the same thing. I know that both you and I are fans of Phish, and yes, fans of the music, but I became a fan of the music because in part because of the way they structure a show. Like you said, they work really hard both to make each show unique. That's fairly easy, right? I mean, you need to have enough songs. You need to be able to, you need to be willing to put, and if you don't have enough songs, even if you're repeating songs night after night, which most of our bands will do, and that's totally fine. Every band I'm in, you know, repeats songs every night. It's totally fine. But, you know, working to craft the set list differently so that you make it unique, and then being willing in the moment, I always used to joke with Fling when Fling was playing pretty regularly, there were these similar lessons from Phish and other bands, but you know, these particular lessons from Phish, I would, you know, if we had a gig on a Saturday, I would spend an hour and a half at my desk on Friday crafting the perfect set list, and I would test all different permutations of, oh, what if I put these songs together? No, I need to spread this out. Okay, how about this and this and this? I would spend all this time, and I would come up with, all right, this is amazing. And then, like you said, feeling the energy of the band, feeling the vibe of the room. I might even change starting with the first song. But that effort of putting that set list together the day before, it like to call it a waste would be exactly the wrong thing. Like it was 180 degrees from being a waste, even if we didn't play anything that I had crafted together, because the process of going through it put all of these different ideas in my head, the orders of songs, pairings of songs, this, that, and the other thing, that I was fully prepared in the moment to really be able to deliver as the band reacted, as the crowd reacted. I knew, but I also knew that I had the safety net of this set list that I had built. So if inspiration did not strike, I know what song's next, right? You know, but in addition to Phish just making each show unique musically, they are masters of interaction with the crowd. And that, I think, is it arguably more important than even just, you know, I mean, I think their plan of making each show, or like you said, each run unique, is a byproduct of their desire to have this interaction and relationship with their fans. I think that's where that comes from. I don't think it's the other way around. You know what I mean? Because they really work on making sure, like you said, like just like with Van Band, what you've done, you know, people come in, they're a little confused at first because they don't understand everything that's going on, but they also understand that they are welcome in. Right. Mm. It's not like, OK, we're going to put this wall up and because you don't know, you're not allowed. Oh, quite the opposite. Like there's no wall. Come on in and enjoy at whatever level you want to enjoy. Like, you don't have to be all in. But there's a few things that if you learn these few little things, you'll get some of the jokes. You'll get some of this, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know. That's a lot of what I like about Phish and what I've taken from Phish in the bands that I play. And even if we're not, you know, playing improvisational music, or, you know, even if the music's nothing like Phish or whatever. So, yeah.
It's interesting, the concept of the wall. And, you know, I know Pink Floyd has gone on about this, but I'm thinking of the, you know, that fourth wall between band and crowd or fan. But what it really is we're all human beings coming together. And with a desire for the frequencies of the music to heal us. And, you know, maybe that's putting it very flowery for a cover band that, you know, just plays dance music, but I really believe that.
I don't think so. I mean, why people are coming out to be entertained, to be healed, to feel, right? So, like, yeah.
I know that's like, you know, that's the undertone of every concert, and it's not explicitly stated, you know, the vast majority of the time, but I think about that a lot, about how to demolish that wall, how to make it so that, you know, the people that are part of the audience, because they become part of the show, you know, even more so with this request system, they become part of the energetic frequency, because we've all played shows where, you know, we've been background musical wallpaper and, you know, there's people there, but they're, you know, they didn't come to see a concert. They're sort of surprised by the, you know, that there happens to be music. And then we've all been parts of a, you know, greatly put together concert stage where people are coming to see live music and they're so excited for your band. And as soon as you hit the first note, it's electric and people are dancing from the first downbeat to the last note of the encore. And, you know, I think a lot about how to make all shows like that. I mean, sometimes it's a struggle.
Yes. Sometimes it's like, we used to call it dentistry, you know, like pulling teeth, right? You know, this band I was in Texas, occasionally, you play those gigs. And I remember many nights our guitar player, who was the leader of the band, he turned around and he's like, well, it's another night of dentistry here, you know, we'll make it happen. So
but people go to school to become dentists, and, you know, yeah, there's a paycheck involved with that,
but
maybe there's some joy in pulling teeth that can be found.
I had a dentist also in Austin who, he had to pull one of my teeth, and he asked me, he was a friend of mine, he used to actually come out and see the band play, and I had a baby tooth with no adult tooth behind it, which meant it was only being held in. I was in my 20s or whatever. It was only being held in by either side, you know, the teeth on either side. He's like, this is just going to pop right out. I'm like, okay. He's like, do you mind? I've never done this before. He's like, do you mind if I pull your tooth out with my hand?
Oh.
And I was like, sure, man, no problem. So he like made a big show of it. He put his foot up on the chair and like yanked it out. But he was having fun, right? Like like there's joy in pulling teeth. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that.
But there was interactivity, right? Like that was the thing is we were in it together and that was the joy.
And sometimes that is the saving grace of a quote unquote wallpaper gig, that if you can find a little, you know, one song that connects with somebody in the crowd and brings them alive. You know, we had one of those gigs a couple months ago, and I just recall there was somebody in a wheelchair and they were having so much fun to our music. And, you know, a lot of times the bands will judge a show by how many people are up and dancing. And yeah, that's the one metric that we can go off of. But I found myself on stage and I was like, I'm feeling it again right now. I was like getting emotional watching this person just groove in their wheelchair.
Ah, that's awesome. That's great.
And it's not 1,000 people dancing to our best song, but it's a moment that I will take with me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some of those moments from the stage that it just sit with you. And that's a wonderful thing to be able to take home and keep.
Yeah. And it's all because, you know, I decided as a kid, you know, I had some friends that started a band and I decided to pick up an instrument and join them. And, you know, it continues to fill my life with those sort of magical moments. That's just one example out of, you know, a billion I could conjure up at this moment. But I look out and I see people that are forgetting their troubles.
Yeah.
They're getting lost in the, you know, the power of the music and just being in the present moment. That's a gift right there. It heals us as players as well as those in the audience. And, you know, not every song of every show is going to feel that way. But to me, like a goal other than dancing is just one moment of connection in a night.
Yeah.
That's a good measurement.
I agree. I'm reminded there was a concert film that was produced. It was, you know, probably 20 years ago. Paul McCartney's the band that he's currently with. I think it was one of his first tours with this band with, you know, Abel Boreal Jr. on drums and Brian Ray and Rusty Anderson. And of course, Wix Wickens, who's been with him forever. And I think it was called Back in the USA was what they named this concert film. And it was a really great film. We watched it at home. You know, we'd put it on often. And I think it was Brian Ray. It was either Brian or Rusty who at one moment in the film, you know, they were talking to him like, what's it like playing these songs, you know, with that guy singing them, right? You know, and he's like, oh, yeah. He says, it's amazing. He says, what's really cool is watching people when the song starts. He's like, it's almost like they get younger for a second. Like they go back in time to when that song first like hit them. And this lightning bolt happens like routinely, he says, through our show. He's like, and I just get to watch these people, you know, and it only happens for an instant and then they're back. But it takes them back. And he's like, it's really wonderful. Like he loved it. It was a very, your story here reminded me of his there. Like, yeah, these songs, these moments mean something to people. Mm. And it's cool to be able to deliver that.
Yes, I've experienced that. I saw Paul McCartney. It's one of the, I think it's the only concert that I went to with my parents and my brother, like as a whole family.
Yeah.
It's the only concert because it's so multi-generational, that music.
Yeah.
And growing up a bass player, my dad was always like, listen to Paul McCartney on this one.
You know, yeah.
We would drive in the car and he'd say, check out this bass line. He doesn't even know what the bass line is, but he knows it's like the lower end of the music. And Paul McCartney was pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And
yeah. He still is.
He's great. And huge inspiration for me. One of my main guys. I would say my top three, I'm just throwing out my favorite bassists and inspirations, are Paul McCartney, Flea from the Chili Peppers was huge for me.
Yeah.
And then family man, Aston Barrett, who's the bass player for Bob Marley, for most of his career. So between those three, that was really huge for my bass playing and studying. But back to Paul McCartney for a second. At that concert, I just recall Hey Jude and the Na 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 section, just like everybody in the entire stadium singing along to this wordless, just human noise, all singing together. And remember that being really, really powerful at the time.
Now you're bringing tears to my eyes. Yeah, it like I had a similar moment with my kids, my wife, and my dad and his wife at McCartney show, I had forgotten that we saw McCartney together. Similar moment with again the same group of people at a Beach Boys show, and this was in, you know, with my definition, the real Beach Boys, at least as they could have been. Brian Wilson was touring with them, and the whole family singing Sloop John B, which of course wasn't their song anyway, but you know, they kind of made it their own. And moments like that, it transcends the logistics of the moment. There's something more going on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right now, I think I mentioned a little earlier that I've been hired to play bass for another band.
Yeah.
And the band is it's called At the Hop, and they specialize in like, you know, old school 50s style, 60s style music. And I'm going back now and learning all of these classic, incredible bass lines. You know, a lot of them are very blues based, but it's been such a joy to have the bass out again. Like I got hired for the gig like a month ago, and literally the next day I was playing bass all day long. And that's exactly what I was looking for, because I need a gig on the calendar. That's just how I work, because I'm so busy with my own band, that if I put a gig on the calendar where I need to do something, that's when I'm going to start preparing and stop procrastinating and actually, you know, pick the thing up. And I've been jamming on bass for the last month or so and just having such a great time. And I'm learning my own band songs all on bass, which I know all the chord. You know, I've been playing them on guitar for years now.
Yeah, but it's different. I mean, you're playing different parts. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, I'm familiar with the bass lines, but now I'm digging in. I'm all those little riffs that I've let just pass by my ear, I'm actually going in and learning them. And it's such a joy to know that in the future, let's say I can't find a bass player, I know that I can do the gig and I can find a guitar player.
Yes.
So part of that is just expanding my options even more, because I have such a team built on every instrument except for guitar, because I've been at every gig and I'm the band leader and I'm running the whole stage setup and
but you could do that with a bass in your hand too, like,
right? Exactly. Yep. But I initially was trying to replace myself, but I'm like, I do all these other things besides just play guitar, so I don't know how I can quite, you know, make that feasible. And then I had this light bulb moment of, oh, I could play bass. Yep. And then I could bring in guitar players. I could literally, you know, watch them do the gig and make sure that they're, you know, living up to the Van Van you know, style. And and I'll do so while I'm hiring myself to play bass. So that's been a revelation for me. And, you know, one of the other things that has been popping off for me in the last, I would say, 6 months is that I've been doing a lot of sound and engineer jobs.
Ah, all right.
So I've always done sound for all the bands I've ever been in since I was, you know, a teenager getting started.
Even with Van Band, even the larger shows you do, are you doing it from the stage most of the time?
No, if sound is hired out, I am happy to relinquish
that. Got it. Okay. Yeah,
and just be the guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, it's less stuff to worry about. But oftentimes we want to mix our own in-ears, and if that's the case, I'll sometimes still bring my own mixer. If they have like a 32 and I know that everything's covered, you know, I'm fine with that.
Yep.
But there's some sound companies that are not so professional, and I'd still rather do my own setup and just give them, you know, the left, right, and mix the house, but we take care of everything else. We have a gig coming up. Actually, we just added a last-minute gig for this Saturday, 420. And it was a tentative gig for a long time, and then they told me, no, it's not happening. And then I got a text yesterday, less than a week away, saying, hey, the gig's back on. Can you still do it? And you know how it is when you work with a lot of busy people, which I do, with less than a week notice, you know, not everybody's going to be available, especially my top choices. But right now I'm mostly assembled with the band. I still need a bass player and keys player, but I'm happy to take a break from scheduling the band and chat with you, Dave.
Thanks. You could always find a guitar player and play bass for this coming gig, you know.
I have thought about it. But,
it just opens your options, like you said. Yeah.
The other gig is in May, so I've given myself a little more time to, you know,
deadlines are wonderful motivators, my friend.
Very true. Yeah. And I would be fine. I know all the songs. It's just a matter of I'm a details person. And, you know, if I'm going to do the job, I want to do it to my highest capacity. And, you know, for me, that's a lot of preparation and it's a lot of listening intently. And it's a lot of just, you know, practicing until I just can't get it wrong, you know?
Yeah. You are reminding me, I have a rehearsal on Monday. So a week from, we're recording this on the same day it's releasing. So on, mm-hmm. we're recording this on the 15th. I've got a rehearsal on the 22nd for, with the band for a musical that I'm doing, Spring Awakening. I've done it before. It's been a while. It's a fairly, I don't want to say easy. It's a straight ahead show. There's not a whole, based on what I remember, there's not a whole lot of twists and turns. I know I'm wrong about that to some degree. I have not yet looked at the music again, nor even listened to the music. And as you're saying this, I'm realizing I need to get on that because I really want to show up at the rehearsal being prepared. My problem is I know I'm a decent enough reader that I could go into this rehearsal, especially having done the show before. I could go into this rehearsal right now and most of the music would go just fine. But it's not what I like to do. I like to be, like you said, I don't know if for this I would be as prepared as I would need to not be able to get it wrong. But I want to be more prepared than I am right now. I want to have played it through a few times. Yeah.
Just to freshen it up in your mind. You know, even if you played it 1,000 times, but it's been a year since you pulled it out.
It's been probably 8 years. So,
yeah. So it's time for a refresh.
I need a refresh. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I should not go in because there's a couple of grooves where they're very specific and, I just need to get my hands, I can read it. But sometimes in the moment, I know what it's supposed to be, but my hands, I would play it technically correctly, but it wouldn't groove if it's the first time I'm playing this specific logistical pattern in eight years, right?
You're thinking more,
yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking more because, you know, when I'm playing songs in, even in a cover band, it depends on how to the letter any given cover band is, but certainly an original band where I'm the one who crafted the drum parts, those are mostly going to be natural for me. I mean, unless I created something difficult for myself, which I do sometimes, like, you know, it happens, but 99% of it is going to be, what would I have played here? This turns out that's what I played here. Right. You know, those kinds of things, you get into your own patterns. And cover songs sometimes that way, but for theater shows, because everyone's reading, I can get away with adapting it somewhat, but to a degree, I have to stay pretty true to what's written on the page in terms of the way the groove feels, because I know the bass player is also playing accents that fit with what the drum part says, and so is the piano player, right? Like, you know, and so... These things aren't natural to me, even if they're within my capabilities. It's not how I would play this part. And so I need to play it that way. And again, there's some wiggle room there, but not as much as I would have on just like a pickup gig, right? Where it's like, all right, we're going to go play 60s and 70s tunes. Do you know these? Well, yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. All right, go. You know, it's not, kind of is not going to cut it.
So, yeah, blues and A, go for it.
Blues and A, go, and you and the bass player sort of negotiate, or as the drummer, me and the bass player, you know, negotiate, like, where's the pocket going to sit? Okay, that's where it's going to sit. Great, no problem. Is that different than the recording? A little. Whatever. It's fine. I don't get that with this. But there,
yeah, and you're aiming for what's best for the collective. It's not one person on stage that people are hearing. It's
correct.
The entire unit.
Yeah, and we're and the band in a traditional musical, which this is, even though the band's going to be on stage, you know, it's about supporting the songs so that the songs can tell the story. And so there's a function to this, and you don't, yeah, like you said, you don't, it's not about the band as much. Yeah.
Right. So you mentioned a pickup gig, Dave, and you jarred a story in my memory here.
Let's go.
I'd love to share it with you. So, about 2 months ago, let me back up. I'll start the story a little earlier and we'll get to how it was kind of a pickup gig, but back in 2008, I attended a wedding and the father of the bride wanted to sing a song to his daughter.
Okay.
And he played guitar and he was a little nervous to get up and sing by himself. So he asked me, "Hey, can you play with me?" The song was "Wonderful Tonight" by Eric Clapton. And he altered the lyrics to be fitting to his daughter.
Nice.
So I got up with this random wedding band and played the song with them. Never rehearsed it, never met them. I was, you know, in 2008. Whatever age I was, not going to do math on the podcast again.
No, live math, never good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was in my 20s, whatever it was. And I got up and played with this band, never met them before. And then the name of the band was called Private Stock Band. So we had a fun song. Everything went well. We got on video and that's sitting up on my YouTube channel. Maybe I'll share with you the link so you could see.
Sure.
But that went down and then years pass, and I'm looking for a wedding band for me and my wife, and we ended up deciding to hire the same band, Private Stock Band. So they performed at my wedding, and it was sort of this full circle moment of, you know, I jammed with them when I was much younger, and here we are. And at that night at my wedding, I ended up collabing. This was towards the end of my last original band, Bushwood.
Okay.
And all of my Bushwood bandmates were at my wedding. And I coordinated with the Private Stock Band that, hey, at some point in the evening, I would love to do a super jam where either we jam with you or we get up and we take over all the instruments and play a few songs. And the band leader, his name is Eric, he told me, yeah, let's do both. So we got up and we played one original song, and then we did two cover songs, I Feel Good and Superstition, James Brown, Stevie Wonder, respectively.
Yep.
And we had this amazing memory playing at my wedding with my my band mixed with this Private Stock Band. So we generated just an incredible memory, and everybody, all my friends and family, got to see you know, my band perform. A lot of them have never seen me perform my whole life. And, you know, that was a great moment. So fast forward to 2 months ago, this band Private Stock was supposed to play at a venue here in South Florida. And I get a text. This is a Friday. I'm at work, doing my day job as a financial analyst. And I get a text on my lunch break about, you know, let's call it 12 p.m. from the band leader of Private Stock saying, "Hey, we double booked ourselves for tonight. Is there any chance that you can take over this gig?" And we didn't have any gigs booked for that weekend. So I told him, "Give me a few minutes." Tentatively, yes. I typically always say yes as long as I'm available, but this was such short notice.
You're talking hours, right?
I'm talking downbeat. It was 8 p.m. So we're talking about, you know, 6 or 7 hours before we would have to be there to start setting up.
Hours. Wow.
Yeah. What's the shortest notice you've ever had for a gig? I'll pause the story for
you. Oh man. That's a good question. It might have been, I think there's two that come to mind, and they were both about 3 or 4 hours. But it was just me. It was just like, "Dave, can you play drums? Can you drop in and play drums in this thing?" One of them was a theater gig, so I didn't know the show, but I knew there was going to be a book there, and I also knew there was going to be a very appreciative music director who was going to walk me through every moment of the show. In theater pits, just for people who've never done it before, oftentimes, and certainly this particular time, the music director was the piano player, and he had a microphone that only went to our ears, right? The musician's ears. And we were off stage. So he was just constantly talking me through this gig, right? You know, it's like, okay, do you see what's coming up? Does that make sense to you? Yep. Okay. Yep. And he and I'd work together. So it was the fun kind of stressful for that, you know, because I knew, I'm like, all I have to do is not totally screw this up and I'm Superman, right? Like, everybody's going to love me.
Yeah, you saved the day.
Correct.
For sure.
And
so that's just you. Right?
That was
that's
just me. And the other one was also just me. It was okay. You know, can you drop in? Our drummer's sick. Can you play? And it was like, yeah, it was a fairly straight ahead cover band. So again, like the band carried me in a sense. Right. But yeah, in terms of full band, can you play? It's probably a full day's notice, I would say.
Okay. And, you know, typically when your band is a set lineup, it's very difficult to find, you know, everybody available within that sort of short notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And only because I had the option to, you know, when I didn't find, you know, one drummer, I contacted the next immediately, you know, as soon as I got a no text, which I got several of them,
I think
over 20 no's of people that were not available. And I was very, very close to just saying, you know what, it's not going to happen, and just giving up. But I stuck with it. And there's always something in my mind that's like, if you can pull this off, you're the hero. And
you're the hero. You're Superman.
It's not an ego thing. It's more about helping this venue have music for the night. Otherwise, it's empty stage. And I know that they, beyond the offer being given to me, I know another band got that same text saying, hey, can you do it? And they actually had priority over our band because they had played at this venue once before, but they were not able to assemble a lineup. So the owner calls me, and now at this point, it's about 3 p.m., and I have assembled most of the lineup, but I don't have singers yet.
Oh,
so I have myself, I have bass, I have drums, and I have keys. Okay, so
could you have had the four of you sing the gig? No, okay, no. All right.
I'm not a lead singer. You know, I have a background vocal voice.
Got it.
That's how I'll best put it.
Yep.
You know, I do a little bit of rapping in the show and, you know, backup vocals, but I would never hire myself to sing lead on the entire gig.
So as it stood, you would not even call the venue and say, hey, look, I have a band, no singers. We can sing it, but it's not going to be our quality.
No, that
was not an option. Okay, just wanted to paint that picture. Okay,
right. Yeah. I wouldn't put that on stage. And
got it.
Honestly, as soon as I found one singer, that I will put on stage.
That, sure.
My ideal is two singers because I like having the male and the female. I like the harmonies. That's my ideal lineup, is like a six piece right now. And so none of my singers were available. And I have, at that point, I had 10 singers. So, but beyond the 10 singers that have worked with me, there's a deeper list that I keep that is potential musicians and
the
vocals.
Reserves.
The reserves, exactly. And maybe I've offered them a few gigs even, and they just haven't been available. So, you know, once somebody plays a gig with me, I highlight them a certain color that they're now in the VAM fam.
Yeah.
But until then, they stay another color that is like, maybe potentially one day they might be VAM fam. And so the male vocalist that I got, he's a guy that typically sings with really high-paying wedding bands, just happened to not have a gig on that Friday night. And I got him. He was available. So I immediately called the owner of the club and I said, look, we got a band. Book us. We're ready to go. And he said, give me 30 minutes. I know time is of the essence. Let me just make sure everything.
Yeah.
He was waiting on the other band to confirm or not.
Of course.
So about 45 minutes later, he calls me back and says, the gig is yours. Let's do it. And we quickly agreed on a rate. I charged a little extra because at that moment, if we're going to talk leverage for a second, the leverage was very much in my corner.
Yeah. Yeah. You were
his venue for the night.
That's right.
And not only just put music on the stage, but like I mentioned, the band that was going to play there that night is very well known. They've been rocking South Florida and making people dance at weddings. Very high paid band for 30 years or whatever.
Yeah,
so
they
had a lot of people made reservations to come see them. And it was going to be a very, very big letdown if the stage was empty that night. And I knew that, and I know my band is great, and I know I've been trying to get an opportunity at this venue for quite some time, but they weren't quite giving us a gig for whatever reason.
I don't know why. Son, you're right. You had leverage, I have no doubt that you also approached it with the highest level of customer service, despite knowing that you had leverage. Right?
Of course,
because you're playing for the future at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's almost never a take it or leave it scenario. It's like, here's our asking price based on this current scenario. If for some reason that doesn't work for you, let's chat. But this is what we feel we deserve. And I'm, just very businessman about it. I want to make sure I pay everybody well that I hire. That's a big priority for me, because I know when other bands hire me, I want to get paid a certain rate. And it's typically about like 200 a person as the minimum, throwing that out there. I really try to keep that as like, that's the lowest I would like to go. And so I booked the band as a
hang on. I want to shine a light back on this, because I think you just said two phrases here that are really valuable to everyone listening, but especially to those listening who aren't as comfortable with negotiations like this, right? Because you don't want to lose, even in this scenario where you have the leverage, you don't want to lose the gig. You've already put in some work, right? You've already assembled a band, and now you're kind of looking forward to, being able to tell this story right here, right?
Sure.
And not that you were thinking about this show, but in general, we like to tell our stories. And so this is a good story to tell. I'm glad you're telling it. Mm. But this phrase, here's our asking price, period. If for some reason that doesn't work for you, let's chat. Because like that as a two sentence thing is a perfect way to present to them, here's what I am confident that we are worth. Mm-hmm. If your budget doesn't allow you to pay us what we're worth, please tell me, let's see what we can do. And sometimes the compromise there and the negotiation, if you will, is, okay, well, I was going to bring six people. You really only have budget for 4.5. I'll stretch that to 5 and we'll do the gig this way for you. Right. But it opens that door for the conversation. In this scenario, you knew they had more money than you were probably asking anyway in the budget. But still, it's nice to throw that out there. It shows that you are coming in with confidence, but also not this isn't the end of the road, right? It's not the silent close.
Exactly.
And then, the backing it up with, especially if they start asking, well, that seems a little high. The second thing you said, I want to make sure I pay everyone well. That's a really nice way of sort of expanding. It's not just about you. It's I'm bringing these people in, and here's I need to pay them and me, and there's all this gear, right? You can expand that if you want, but just starting with, I want to make sure I pay everyone. So I put these in the show notes. I've put these quotes in there at giggabpodcast.com, but I know I've derailed your story. These are important things, I think.
No, I hear you. I wish somebody had told me that earlier on.
Exactly.
And part of it is I also solicited the band that had to cancel. I said, what were you going to get? I'm a friendly band leader. I'm transparent about all of this because I feel it only helps all of us, ask for the right number. And, it's not about taking advantage of a venue at all. It's that, understanding what they were going to get paid in a normal scenario and then adding a couple $100 on top because I know we were saving their ass at the last minute.
Yes.
And, also setting the foundation for our future rate at this same club. They're not going to now say, hey, we're going to pay you less than we did that first time.
Yep.
They're honoring that same rate. And I don't know what they pay other bands. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
I know that I am the businessman for the Van Band. And I want, like we said, to deliver the best value at a rate that works for us.
Yes. That's and, it. That's yeah. it. Yep. No, I love that. That's, I remember we had this one gig, it was an original band, this band called Go Figure. I was in college, and somehow we got picked to play the post prom party for the Staples High School, Westport, Connecticut. Doesn't matter. And it would be this late night party, right? Like, it was on the beach, and we would play from, like, I think we started at 2 a.m. and we would play till sunrise. Like, I think that's my recollection of this. But maybe it was midnight and we played till, I don't know, 4 a.m. The sun was always coming up, certainly by the time we were leaving. And we would hire, there was enough budget that we would hire a sound engineer for this. And it also kind of made the night go a little easier, not having to do all of it ourselves. Sure. And one year, you know, they came to us and were like, okay, hey, I think I was booking the band at that point in time. They came to me and were like, all right, yep, let's do it again. So I call Steve, the sound guy that we'd worked with a bunch, and he's like, oh no, I'm not available. And I'm like, oh crap. Oh, that sucks. Like, it was nice because everybody knew the routine. Everybody knew how the beach worked in the middle of the night, like all those things. And I was like, all right, okay, no problem. I'll find somebody else. Hung up the phone and I start thinking about who else I'm going to call. And I had other people, like, you know, we had played around in the area long enough that we'd made enough relationships and worked with other teams. Mm-hmm. And immediately my phone rings again, and it's Steve, the sound guy who can't do it. And he's like, hey, make sure you charge what I've been charging for the sound, no matter what those other people want to charge. He's like, you put the rest of the money in your pocket if you need to, but don't lower the rate for the sound. He's like, we don't want to mess up the perceived value here. And he, and it was a good lesson. Like, oh, right. Like, if we start this race to the bottom, we'll get there. You know, like, you, and so it was like, oh yeah, okay, like, cool. And I think I probably was thinking along those lines anyway, but it was really interesting to see him, like, dive in and, like, protect this turf, the rate turf, if you will. So,
No, it's so true. I mean, there's many bands in my local space that are, you know, undervaluing themselves.
Yes.
I see it and I'm like, why? These venues have the money to pay you. They can afford it, but you're just not asking for it.
Just ask for it. Just ask. Yeah. And ask politely, but ask confidently. That's really the key. Yep.
It is a bit amorphous, though, because as you're a band building a band and growing it, it's like, how does that reflect on our rate? You know?
Yes.
If we add 5 more songs, does that make us worth $100 more? Like, what is the threshold? And there's really no rules about it. It's really just a perceived value that you feel you offer. And then as soon as you get paid, you know, whatever your highest amount you've ever earned, that becomes your new threshold.
That's the baseline. Yep.
that's now the baseline. And, you know, that works a lot for us when we do all these different city gigs.
Yes.
They'll ask us, like, hey, what's your rate? And I said, well, you know, we played for Fort Lauderdale. They paid us X dollars. You know, does that work for you? And it's, of course, you know, the highest we've ever made at a gig. And, you know, if not, they'll let us know and we'll negotiate. But that's now my new asking price, you know, and it just keeps rising, which is a great thing. But I want to finish the story about this gig. And so at that moment, we had a 5-piece lineup. I got the male singer. I was still looking for a female singer, even though I had already booked the gig, even though I locked in the rate. I would still, my ideal was to have a female singer. So I reached out, and I think I shared this when I was on the last time with you guys, that I solicit my current network saying, do you know somebody that's a good fit for the Van Band vibe? People know what we do now. We're a dance band.
Yeah.
You know, they appreciate the work that I put in as a band leader to facilitate an easy experience for new people to come in, because we use the click, the cues, and the lyric teleprompter.
Right.
Those are the magic trifecta to that we could play a gig. And we did play a gig that night with 2 brand new lead singers. I'm sort of jumping ahead a little bit.
Oh, that's great.
But I ended up finding a female singer through a saxophone player that I knew that wasn't even on the gig, but I was just texting with him that day because he also plays drums. And I was initially thinking to hire him, and I ended up getting one of my main drummers. So I told him I didn't need him for the gig, but do you happen to know a singer? And I solicit that because I say, if you hook it up, if I end up hiring somebody because of your recommendation, I send you a finder's fee, $25, whatever it is.
That's great.
So yeah. And it's a way for me to reward people for helping me, because I really do appreciate it. It's made my band has grown in leaps and bounds over the past 2 years or so because of these incredible recommendations from the fine people I know. And when I was starting, I didn't know anybody in the top 40 world. I didn't know any of these musicians. Yeah. Just about, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I knew none of these people. And now I have a network of about 40 people that are actually playing in my band actively. And then, like I mentioned, the reserves beyond that, you know, that builds the list to maybe like 60 or 75.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
I keep a Google Doc, and whenever I meet somebody and I think they might be a fit, they go on that Google Doc. And there's an order of preference, of course, and people get moved around all the time. It's completely fluid. You know, I have my main rhythm section that I love that tends to be, and, you know, if you look at our Van Band videos, you'll see a lot of the same faces, and you'll know that, okay, Adam does have his preferences.
Well, of course you do. But yeah. Also, you probably occasionally want to, even if your preferences would have been available, peppering in new people, or not new people, but others on the roster, just to keep them up to date and, you know,
exactly.
Let them know they're in the family and like all that
yes.
stuff. Yep.
Yes. And peppering is the perfect word, because I think of it like spice. And like, if I'm a chef and I'm creating a dish, you know, of course we want a little bit of salt and pepper and, you know, throw a little bit of heat on there. And what that does is, first of all, it builds community, you know, an incredible way that, like, now I hear all the time from people that have interacted because they've played in the Van Band together at some point, and then they're doing gigs off somewhere else in another band, and they're like, oh, you know, Adam, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it definitely fosters this community vibe, and people are appreciative of that because they're getting work because of my my setup and my outlook.
Your
they're
network,
getting work elsewhere.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. And I'm always happy to hear about that. And then, so the sax player I know recommended a female vocalist. He said, you know, she sings in wedding bands, top 40 stuff. She'll do great for you. And that's all I needed to hear. You know, it's one thing to find somebody on Craigslist and, you know, have no idea what their deal
is. When you got a personal recommendation, man, like that's the key.
That's gold. It's worth so much. And, you know, $25 is nothing to pay for expanding my network in that way. And I hired her, you know, within the next, you know, 15 minutes. We were locked in for the gig. And I'm literally driving to the gig, and I said to both of the singers, send me your song list. Do you have any song list you have? Any former set list from a different band? Just send it to me. I'm going to put together a rough, you know, usually I plan a set list at least 2 weeks ahead of a show. But this was such last minute situations.
Yeah.
Because the only reason I have to do that is because with the track setup, I have to pull up the songs. At the minimum, I need to pull up the songs in a certain order.
Yes.
So for this gig, I sort of threw everything out the window. I was just going with the flow completely. Just like, in a way, just like musical skydiving. That's the only way I can put it. And I've never been skydiving in a plane, but this is how that felt. And I knew that the venue hired me. They were expecting, you know, a great night. I knew that I had all the pieces, and all the puzzle pieces were there.
But you're packing your parachute on the way down is what you're doing here.
Yes. Yeah. And it was quite joyful. And it's the only show that I've ever completely called it song to song.
Oh,
I usually always, you know, I'll throw audibles, but there's usually a rough outline and a flow that we follow. And this time I got their song list on the way. I pulled up maybe 50 songs that I knew.
Yep.
And then of course the band specific lineup for that night. In my head, I kind of know which songs I've played with each of them at a past gig. You know, I know if there's a new song we added within the last 3 months, that guy hasn't played with me in a while, he probably won't know that one. So there's so many elements flying through my head about, you know, what we can play that night.
You're like me though. You love this. Like, on stage calculus that you need to be doing, right? Like there's all the factors. It's like, what could happen next? What should happen? I love that. Some people do not like that. Like Paul, right? He does not like having to do that on stage. And that's not a judgment on anybody. It's just like how we're wired, you know,
but no, I get it. And there was definitely times where it pulled me out of the current song because
it's definitely
going
to pull you out. Yes.
I'm thinking not only of the next song, but like five songs ahead, because I also want the night to have a certain flow.
Yeah.
That night we were doing three sets. So I wanted to make sure we didn't, you know, play all of our best stuff in that very first set. You know, there's there's so much to handle as the band leader.
But you don't necessarily, with that kind of pickup, like last-minute lineup and some new members, some new faces, mm-hmm. you don't necessarily know what's going to be your best songs.
No, but I know.
But I know, yeah.
You know, with the songs, I think of each song as a tool. And yeah. they're designed, you know, they were written, they were composed, they're all incredible songs, or else we wouldn't be playing them. But each one sort of serves its own little purpose. Some songs, you know, just make me feel like they're an opener song.
Sure.
And some songs just feel like a closer song. And that's just a feeling I get from that tune.
Yep.
And I think of these tunes as my weapons to
absolutely. You know, I always thought of them as arrows in my quiver. Like, which one am I going to pull out? What's the right one? Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We've been here for like an hour and 15. So,
sure.
That was the
end of the story.
No, I appreciate that. I have a question for you though that I wanted to ask last time and I forgot.
Sure.
Where does the name Vam in Vam Band and Vam Jam and all of that come from?
Yeah. What do you think it stands for?
My guess is that Adam is your middle name and V is the first initial of your first name.
Incorrect.
Ah,
but it's a
well,
good guess.
There you go.
No, Adam is my first name.
Okay.
Seth happens to be my middle name.
Got it.
But that's not in the Vam.
Right.
I'll tell you what the origin in a second, but I actually took a note from you and I went to ChatGPT and I said, I have a band called Vam Band. Tell me what you think the acronym stands for.
Love it.
And here's what it came back with. Vibrant Audio Magic. That's one option.
Yep.
Vivid Amplified Melodies. That's another. And here's a third. Velocity Anthem Makers.
Oh.
So those are a few from ChatGPT.
Sure.
I tend to say it stands for Very Awesome Music. And that's what I tell the crowds on stage most often. The origin is that my wife and I started a videography company, and my wife's name is Victoria, which does start with a V. And then my initials are Adam Moskowitz. You know, she ended up marrying me, so she got the same last name.
Sure, sure.
And now, about 10 months ago, we had our first little daughter, and her name is Melina.
Oh.
And that M was not selected on purpose to fit Vam. But it does fit it perfectly. So now it stands for Vicky Adam Molina, and it's our little familial, reminder that even though I'm out there and I'm entertaining crowds and I'm playing music and I'm having a blast doing so, I always put my family first.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is my inspiration for all of it. I look at my daughter's little perfect smile and her laugh, and it's like, She's got the musical bug already. She's got this little tambourine toy and she's shaking it around and dancing to the music that I play when
That's
I'm
awesome.
Learning stuff.
Yeah.
So it's familial. And like I said, we started as a videography company.
Right.
So it was Vam Vid. And then as I was creating a band, I said, you know what? What if I stick with this branding idea of Vam? And I just kind of like how Apple does iPod, iPhone, whatever. I'm just going to go with the flow on this Vam thing. And I'm also an ordained minister. I've done some weddings.
Yep.
So that is called Vam Officiant. And more recently, like the past 6 months, I've been getting a lot of work as this Vam Jam, which I call that company. It's sort of my side hustle to the side hustle where I do sound engineering and videography for other bands.
I want to have you back to talk about that because I think this is really smart. It reminds me, I mean, of a lot of people, but I'm reminded of Dan Meblin, who plays in a band called Pop Fiction out in the Bay Area. We've had him on the show, I think, just once.
Yeah, I
actually got to have him. I got to have him back on. But
yeah,
he
bring him back.
He expanded. He took all of the things that he has, the sound, the stage that he built, like all of these things, and farms those out and hires those out to, you know, to other people to make it, you know, to expand the value of what he's built. And I think it's, I think it's really smart. So
it's a huge networking thing too.
Yeah.
Just like working with these other bands and helping, not
For
only
sure.
give them great sound. I have a great PA system. There's no reason I should be the only band using it. So
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing is the videography aspect that we chatted a little earlier is that helping these other bands that have, just to be honest, crappy promo videos, just to give them something of super high quality, great audio. I usually shoot on 2 or 3 cameras, so multicam. Giving them a product like that to help them go get better gigs, that's really been joyful for me to help others in the community.
I was just going to say, and it helps lift the whole community too.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's a beautiful thing, for real.
It is a beautiful thing. Tell people where they can find you, my friend, if they don't already know.
Yeah. So I can be found, you know, wherever you look, you know, just look around.
We'll put some links in the show notes.
I'm in the area. Yeah. You know, vanban.com is a good hub. And, you know, I always point people to our Instagram. That seems to be, you know, a good starting place, at vam.band. And I have a personal one for my music at Adam Moskowitz Music.
Cool.
Give a follow, give a like. It's all free to do. We're on YouTube, TikTok, you know, Facebook, wherever you look, we're there.
Amazing. And to that end, Gig Gab Podcast on Instagram as well. That's a relatively new thing for us. And then go to giggabpodcast.com and sign up for our mailing list so you get the show notes for all this. Every time we put out an episode, we make it easy for you.
Hey, Dave.
Adam. Hey, Dave.
Yeah, what's that?
Oh, well. Performing.
I love it. Have a good one, folks. We'll see you next week.